Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 23, and as you may have noticed, we have here our favorite rock star, Michael Kimsel, this month.
Oh, man.
It's just Michael, not the special K.
No, actually, it's, Michael, lowercase Kimsel, lowercase D, that's my... It's my inner city name when I'm rapping. It's kind of it brings grammar to the streets. It's kind of making making English fun again. It's making it hip and cool. Lowercase D.
Yeah. Be Peace simple. Out.
Yeah.
Be minimalistic. Okay, I was going to ask you how are you doing, but I can see you are fine as always. Wonder if there's anything to comment about how are you doing besides that.
Well, I'm feeling. I'm kind of feeling. I'd rather feel major or. But I'm kind of feeling minor. And then maybe another minor. So I'm kind of. It's a gray day here in Raleigh. I would turn the camera around, but I'd probably knock over my Red Thunder first off. Yeah. This is the cheap stuff from Aldi. It's kind of a gray day, and I've got a lot of work that I'm behind on, so I'm kind of feeling a little minor key, a little sad. Not the minorest of keys, but you know, certainly not totally major.
Okay, I can understand. Well, I hope this podcast will cheer you up, and we are going to start with the regular batch of
there you go.
JavaScript topics to talk about, and we are going to start precisely... I was trying to opening it in the right page.
You got to open to the right page, not to the left.
Right. Well.
Should I sing that? You want me to sing that?
I had it open, but I closed.
Put
but
box to the left.
We're going to start talking about a new. Well, I'm not sure if it is so new. It's probably just a different grouping of categories of articles in the blog of a Mozilla site, and they have.
Oh, there you go. There you go. It's up on your screen now. Okay. Sharing it with me.
Well, but it seems they decided to have a special category for JavaScript in their blog to talk about, whatever is related with JavaScript, mostly with Firefox.
Yeah.
And, it seems that they probably want to get some attention, additional attention to whatever they are doing in Firefox related to JavaScript. Well. And on that, they have announced just recently, a couple of weeks ago, the new JIT engine that they are going to use starting Firefox 18.
Which I'm running.
Yes, I was going to ask you precisely about that. Anything you notice different and any great speed improvements that you can tell that are really making a difference?
No.
Not really?
No. Nothing. I could probably stretch that out for a couple of minutes if we need filler here, but no. I've been on the released or the nightly build channel, so every few days it does something. So likely some things are faster, but it doesn't feel all that different to me. I don't notice any major changes day to day. So if I went and used something from a year ago, it's probably faster, but I don't feel it.
Well. I suppose it probably has something to speed up the JavaScript engine as before, right? Or this is it's probably not a great improvement in terms of speed, but probably a different approach in the JIT engine. Because I was this impression that they already had a JIT engine in place, but probably I'm confusing with Chrome.
No. It says there right there their newest JIT. They've had TraceMonkey, they've had other stuff, they've got JIT stuff, or I've had it for a while, and they just make improvements in it, which is why I think I'm not noticing massive, huge, yeah.
Because now I was confused, wondering if this is, they didn't have a JIT engine before, but, other than that, do you think they would make any difference in other aspects, maybe memory consumption or something?
Yeah, hopefully it does, but I'm using 18 right now, and it doesn't I use it. It's just not. I should maybe put a comment on their site saying it's not floating my boat. And I say that as somebody, I like Firefox. I use it a lot. It's just, I haven't noticed any major stuff. Though, if I'm doing the nightly build, they could have some extra tracing and stuff on. Maybe I got to go flip some switches to get it to go faster. I don't know. But yeah. Every version gets better.
Well, I was just hoping to notice something about what is better in there. Well, anyway, moving on with the podcast.
There you go.
Michael, you want to comment about AngularJS that you have been using lately?
Well, I was just going to sing about it first.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, now you keep pronouncing it JIT, and I was just going to sing that song. But I can't find my mojo. Maybe I'll get it to it later. I'm a big McCartney fan, so I thought I could kind of adapt his Wings hit. Anywho, Angular. I could probably write a song about Angular, too. Let's see. Oh, I do it in minor.
This is the cultural moment.
AngularJS, you made me happy. AngularJS, everything else is crappy. I can't really, you know, that's, I got to work on that.
Poem.
Yeah, well, it's philosophical too. It works on multiple levels, kind of like AngularJS. I have a philosophy degree, so I have to be deep now and then. Just I'll lose it otherwise. I mean, I will lose the deepness. On that, while I'm waiting for that to come up, I'm going to hit my screen share and I'm going to say, trying to find out what I'm going to share with you first.
Yeah,
Spotify. No, I'm going to share, I'm just looking for, there we go. AngularJS. Oh, I'm sharing my screen. Have you seen my screen?
Yes, that's coming.
Okay. Cause I still see you and I kind of don't enjoy that too much. I prefer when the big screen.
Sorry.
Are you seeing my screen now?
Yes, it's okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Will that be recorded as my big screen? That is sweet.
I think
okay.
So.
Okay. The AngularJS, and I started using this a week or two ago, and I didn't even see it on the screen initially, but this is actually from Google. It's a project from Google. And I don't know the landscape of kind of this, the latest generation, the last couple of years, too much. Ember and Knockout and some other stuff. Some of these things we've had some write-ups in JS Mag about. Knockout seemed to be pretty popular amongst some .NET people for a while. But Angular, it's probably easiest just to look at some code. Maybe let me make the screen a little bit bigger. And they have a nice little video tutorial. The docs are okay, too. To do advanced stuff, it takes you a while. For me, it's taken me a while to get into the nuances. But the core idea here, can you see this, Manuel?
Yes.
Okay, so the idea is I'm marking up my document directly, and then the Angular code base, when it runs, it scans that and it wires up some events automatically. So I mark this whole document as an NG app. They use NG as a prefix. Down here, I have an input type. I can still have IDs and whatnot, but to work with Angular directly, I would say this is an NG model, and it's called your name. I use this templating bracket syntax to say, hey, your name should also go here. And if I was to run that, or as I'm running that, you see that?
So,
maybe you'll see it in a moment.
Yeah, I can see it immediately.
Yeah, it hasn't shown up on my screen yet. But so I've immediately wired up this model and saying the source is here and it needs to be reflected here. Obviously you could do more than this. Some of these examples down here, this to-do list is kind of neat. You can see the markup of structurally, I've got everything in this div is going to be scoped under one controller, to-do control. And down here, to-do control will automatically be passed the scope. So as I refer to proper values inside that block, I can refer to them directly. But scope add to, that's a closure. Scope remaining is a closure. Scope to-dos is a JS block. If I go back to index, I can see here that to-dos is referenced, and I'm going to repeat each one of those is going to do like basically a for each, and each of these will be able to access the JSON data structure directly. So as I over here, if I say, no, that's not done, I get two. If I say that's done, or if I add another task or another to-do, I could say that's done. So it's, you know, you can see there it's got two of three, one of three. I got a lot on my plate now to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, I am not, I'm not an expert at this at all, but it is it's been fun for me to me this is a good balance of good documentation, or so far feels like good documentation, an active community, but the tutorials here and the immediacy of both their interactive stuff and the ability for me, I was able to get stuff up and running in the first 10 minutes, which harkens back to some people maybe remember my old podcast, which I still do, but I interviewed people about Solr, S-O-L-R, and just the idea of decent docs, decent out-of-the-box experience. I can follow a tutorial and have something working and clicking in a few minutes. To me, that is really crucial for my adoption. Other people don't work that way. They want to dive into the source code, or they want to read everything, and they want to take their time. I'm not like that. So for me, Angular has been an interesting experience so far, and I'm going to be pressing forward with that on a couple projects.
Yeah,
and I'm not looking to stop my...
Is it data binding, or is there anything else?
There's actually a lot more. Just that idea of the data binding is an easy, quick thing to see.
For sure.
If you look more, there's a lot of nice Ajax interactivity. There's some standard ways. There's standard ways of creating your own reusable components. And there's also a fairly clean way of handling templates, handling client-side templates and reusing template code and binding data to individual templates as well. So there's a lot there, and we could probably do a whole podcast on it at some point if either of us were actually good at it. Yeah. Or we could actually find somebody. If you're listening, you are listening, okay, and watching and are good with Angular, or you think, dude, Angular sucks, Knockout is where it's at, or Ember or something else that you want to come on and kind of challenge us or make me look like an idiot, please do join us join the Hangout, or join us on another podcast, and I will take it like a man.
Yeah, well, it seemed interesting, although just wondering if it would do more something in depth besides that, because sometimes given that it's a Google project, probably was expecting something more.
There actually is a lot more to it. One, and just very briefly, one of the core things, which is not of direct interest to me in the stage that I'm in right now, learning it, but everything is tested. But it also has it has been written for to be testable, to make your code, as you're writing code in it, your code can be testable. A lot of the examples in their documentation actually say, here's some sample code, and right next to it in another tab, here's the tests for it, and you can run these tests directly. So testing is really a first-class citizen, or seems to be, in Angular so far. So
yeah, well, it's interesting. I can tell you that I was not really familiar with that. Unfortunately, it's always a matter of time, because there are so many things being released in the JavaScript world that it's practically impossible to follow everything.
In some ways, kind of shied away from diving into something too much. I am not going to be a world-class expert on Angular, but I am. I made kind of a commitment to myself that I was going to use something out there rather than just my hacky jQuery stuff that I normally do, that I was going to try to invest some time and get better with something, and Angular was the one that struck me. So I will be. I have two projects I'm working on right now that I'm using Angular on, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Painful, and parts of it are painful, but that's me. That's not the framework. So.
Yeah. Well, there's always some sacrifice when you are learning something new that probably is not obvious in the beginning. Well, also exactly. Talking about new things, Windows 8 is about to be released in a few weeks. And,
are we jumping right to Windows 8? You're trying to get all my stuff, all of my talking, just out in one thing, aren't you? So people can just say, well, I'm going to skip from minute 4 to minute 14. Right? That's
really.
That's how I'm reading. Yeah. I want to intersperse myself a bit so they can't skip over me.
Yeah, well, that was just an introduction to the next segment on which we would be talking about something new. regarding Windows 8, because I'm not a Windows person, so it's probably not my type of thing to comment. But since you have tried something, you want to comment about the relation of JavaScript with the Windows 8, right?
Yeah. I am trying to pull up something as well, too. Last Monday, I went to a presentation by Jim Duffy and Brian Hitney. Names may mean something to a few of you listening. Brian Hitney's actually been a guest on the WebDev Radio podcast, I think twice. He is the regional Microsoft developer evangelist. He tends to his own focus of interest is on cloud stuff, Azure and things like that, but he tends to serve as a lot of developer relation stuff. And really, Windows 8, the smartphone stuff and the tablet stuff, and Windows 8 on desktop is the new thing coming. Windows 8, the desktop version is going to be released October 26th, so just about a month from now. So it's really all hands on deck. Everybody at Microsoft is gearing up for this new release. And they gave a presentation on writing apps for Windows 8. And it was interesting. I went because I like to learn about this stuff. And I'd heard a bit about this, and I got a lot of watched some hands-on stuff, and it reminds me a little bit of Palm, the Palm pre-push a couple of years ago. JavaScript is nearly a first-class citizen in Microsoft development now. There are multiple stacks in the Microsoft ecosystem, and I'm not an expert on most of them. Probably 99% of what runs in Windows XP and Windows 7 will still run in Windows 8. But they have introduced a new paradigm. It was originally called Metro, and they've got issues with that, so now it's just the Windows 8 interface. But the way that you write applications, or the way they want you to write most of your applications, is binding to JavaScript. They have an intermediate layer set of libraries called WinJS, which expose a whole host of Windows stuff, down to some hardware stuff, up through things that you may have done with old Windows calls. A lot of those you can do with WinJS now. So most of your applications can be, or you can write full applications that are just in JavaScript and then deploy them. They have a whole app store thing coming and all that. But you can run this, and it's your runtime is IE10, but you have access to a lot of stuff that you wouldn't normally have in a regular browser, traditional browser. So, again, a lot of this is very similar to people that followed the Palm pre stuff, the Palm OS, what became the HP stuff and all that. And I was a big fan of that idea, and Palm never got traction with that. Probably Microsoft will get traction with this. They are, whether you like it or not, it's going to be there 2 years from now. Tens of millions of people will be running Windows 8. And one of the ways to write apps for that is using JavaScript and HTML and CSS. So many of us that have these skills, if you got JavaScript skills, you're going to be able to take that. You want to run Angular, you want to bundle Angular and jQuery and some other stuff into a Windows app and push it out there, you can do that.
So how will that work? They provide tools to compile JavaScript into something.
Oh, it's not really compiling. There's a bundling, like an app that you would push out through the App Store. Now, very similar to the idea of what's going on in the iOS and the Mac world, anything that you're doing with WinJS that you'd want to push out is going to have to be published through their App Store, published and distributed. They're going to have some private app stores for corporations, but right now the push is very consumer oriented. So push out your, build an app, compile it, push it out. The compiling is more zipping. I don't know offhand if your code would actually be visible, or if it would be, I didn't ask, but I should have asked that, or if there will be an obfuscation. I'm assuming there'd be an obfuscation process, or that would be part of it. Though, as with anything, even, standard compiled stuff, somebody that really wants it can get at your source code. Or not your source code, but they can reverse engineer at the very least. There was one other interesting thing to me that came out, and about this, so let's say I push out an app to the App Store, and let's say it's 300 meg. I got a huge app, a lot of assets in it. And then I push out another version because I got some bugs and there's a couple new features. Somebody doesn't have to download all 300 meg again. They've got a fairly granular checksumming process on individual chunks of your file. So, if you've got 90% of your files the same, most of those chunks will be the same, and it would only re-download the delta, not byte delta, but chunk delta. Delta. I don't know how big the chunks are, but that's a goal there too, especially because this is also going to be pushed out on tablets and smartphones eventually, the same mechanism for distribution. So they thought a lot about bandwidth.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a concern of app stores when they provide updates for new releases of the applications. You don't have to reload the whole thing.
Well, and you know, to some extent, that probably puts some people off, especially on mobile. And if I see something, I don't think I necessarily want to download another 300 meg. Right now, because that might put me over my data cap or my data bandwidth or whatever. So,
yeah.
You know, telling people ahead of time, hey, this is only going to be an extra 20 meg download instead of 300. That's pretty cool.
So, but regarding JavaScript, you even mentioned jQuery and stuff like that. That is usually to manipulate documents on the DOM objects. Are you saying that they somehow provide a DOM environment on which you manipulate user interfaces like a DOM?
Your apps are web apps. The apps that you make are web apps. They've got a lot of their UI controls are updated web controls. It's actually pissed off some of the developer community because some of the things that they have wanted from XAML and some of the other toolkits are not available in standard Windows 8 JavaScript UI stuff. It's very web oriented for people. And again, you're not going to run it directly in a browser, but your app would be running effectively in an IE10 engine.
Think of
having, you know, IE10 or IE9, but having access to the file system, having access to some other aspects of the computer that you don't normally have access to. Well managed offline storage, synced offline storage. So anything that you do can automatically be synced up to a cloud device at some point.
Well, that's interesting. I think it's clever from Microsoft to do that, given that JavaScript has been gaining a lot of momentum over the last years.
Yeah.
Many people would like to do both client-side and server-side development on JavaScript and now desktop-side. If we can assume that Windows 8 will be a desktop environment or as well as a mobile environment.
Yeah, mobile, tablets, desktop, most of that stuff, most of your code should run, if you do the JavaScript stuff, should run on all those devices pretty much untouched. What's interesting to me, not just the kind of the geeky tech stuff, but this is a real 180 for Microsoft. I think they've realized that they're not in control of this anymore, and they are, you know, you could look and say, well, they're just playing catch up, and they're realizing they've lost everything. They've got to do something different. And rather, in the past, all their stuff was, you know, you write for Microsoft only. Yeah, if you're taking advantage of everything on the Microsoft platform, you're going to be tied to that, but just like you are on Apple or just like you are in Java or something. But using JavaScript and CSS and HTML and all these widgets as the core of your app and saying this is a first-class citizen will make it easier for people to come into that ecosystem, but also make it easier for people to leave. If you write something, you could write something on Windows 8 first or in conjunction while you're writing other stuff at the same time, or nearly. You can reuse a lot of your logic and reuse a lot of your assets much more simply than saying, well, I'm going to write an Objective-C app and then try to move it to Java or try to move it to C# or something. I think they've got a lot riding on this, and I don't think this is going to be an easy win for them. But as a JavaScript proponent, just like I really liked the Palm move several years ago, that didn't work. I think that was less a tech issue, more of a management issue. I'm hoping that Microsoft pulls this off.
Well, I think they are in the right track. I'm not sure if they will all of a sudden be loved for that, but as you mentioned, they are even sort of upsetting their own traditional developers because they are not making all the libraries available that they have made in the past for the Windows 8 development. But I think converging to Java, it is a different environment. And, well, I don't know
I'm back.
This is going to be acceptable for well accepted in the whole developer community, but I think it's a good move. And
it may upset some developers, but it may. I don't think it will right off the bat for a lot of people, but it will be attractive to another class of developers, the web developer who has traditionally not been able to get their stuff onto Windows desktops. It's open. So while you may upset some of your current people, if you can attract new developers in the long term, over the next 5-10 years, that may be a very strategic win.
Yeah, well, we have to wait and see, but I think that's a good move in general.
Yeah.
And talking about moves, we need to move on to the
Please.
Next topic on this podcast. I was willing to talk about a couple of libraries that they sort of do the same thing and with the different approaches, but the purpose here is mainly to turn pages like a book. Provide the user interface for that. I'm just trying to open the right window. Let me see.
Turnjs.com, I think, is the first one, right?
Well, this is the first that I had opened. And basically what it provides is a means to present pages as in a book. You can see it here. You can click to turn a page like many book reading applications on reading devices. Well, at least those that probably the original Kindle does not do this because it's too slow. But I don't know if it is coming smoothly over there.
Yeah, it's looking pretty. I mean, I've seen it on my machine, but also through the video, it's looking pretty smooth too.
Yes, and this is TurnJS, and there is another one that I also seen that I'm not sure if I'm going to. It's a different kind of turning. Let's see. Well, it's also nice. Probably not as fancy because it. This one uses CSS 3D transforms. And the other one, I'm not sure what it is. Probably they use graphics manipulation on us. And well, it gives a good impression to your pages. And if you have something to show, like a book, and you probably would like to try these libraries. The only thing that made me wonder about TurnJS is that it says it is open source. It is available on GitHub, and if you want to get it now, it seems you have to pay a license per domain, which is a bit odd. I do not have anything against paying for software, but since this is JavaScript, is there a difference between the version that is in GitHub and the version that is in that they sell? I don't know, because if they offer the code all open source, why would people pay for it?
Well, because you should. I mean, I faced this issue recently with not JavaScript, but a Java library called iText. The earlier version that I'd used was LGPL, and a couple of years ago they switched it to AGPL, which at the moment is not something that the client I'm working with wants to use, nor do they have the budget to pay for a license. So it is open source. We could just use it, use the latest version and not pay them, but morally that's not really the good thing to do. So we're using the earlier version, which has bugs in it. It's not as fast. It's not as cool. We're making that moral stand, and he probably has people taking it and using it and not paying for it. But
yeah, well, I don't have anything against that. Well, my question would be: is there a difference between the version in GitHub and the main version?
There probably I don't know. There may be, there may not. But my guess is that there probably isn't.
Yeah. Well,
he's
anyway,
from Venezuela, actually.
Right. Well, the idea here is mainly to tell our audience about these two libraries for very similar purposes.
Sure.
But I just had this doubt. I was wondering if was there anything that I was not noticing about it. Anyway, moving on to the next topic, I would like to comment a bit about a new library about genetic algorithms. Michael, are you familiar with genetic algorithms?
Well, I have some genetics in me, but I don't really know much about how they work.
Okay, the answer is no. Well, no,
I got some from my dad many years ago.
And that should work.
Yeah.
Anyway, this genetic algorithms, it's basically a metaphor regarding optimization of processes that depend on the order. And the metaphor is on the genes. If you switch the order of the genes, the way they are arranged, they are composed in your genetic sequence. You can reach to different results, and genetic algorithms are used to a lot of optimization problems. Like if you have many customers to serve, all of a sudden, which one you will serve first? So maybe you serve the one that arrived first, but if that customer is very far, maybe in a place that will take a long time to reach there, maybe you can serve customers that are closer. Well, this is just not a very good example of a problem that
that's a horrible example. That's a really horrible example. Yes, but I'm agreeing with you. Yes.
So. Well, that's me trying to make it simple. And anyway, the purpose here is not to explain the genetic algorithms with accuracy or being detailed about it, but just to mention about this article here that tells about some machine learning algorithms based on genetic algorithms that are implemented in JavaScript. And if you have interest in this kind of the problems, optimization, and all these things that are a bit advanced, but they have good use cases for real-world problems, you may want to check out this article here. And that was basically all that I wanted to comment about. I'm not even an expert, as you may guess, to tell much more than this about this problem. And
question about in Brazilian, how do you say no?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit nasal.
No?
Yeah.
I should say it nasally? No?
No. Yeah. you are good at foreign languages.
I'm not very good at English, but I'm great with other languages. Gracias. Gracias, señor.
Okay, again, back to Spanish.
it's the closest I've got.
Yeah, okay. Well, moving on with the podcast, now I'm going to talk about just briefly about a new library, sort of. Application that is basically presented as a library that will let you edit, create and edit Gantt charts for whatever are your purposes. This is an interesting application because it lets you create all sorts of schedules for tasks that you want to perform, and all this is available as a library that you can embed in a site that you may have. And if you have any purposes that on which this would be useful, you may want to try it because it's very feature complete, I would say. And okay, I'm trying to switch off the screen sharing here. Okay, it worked. Well, regarding the Gantt charts, personally, I do not have any applications that I could use it. But I thought it would be interesting. Michael, do you have any applications that you would find useful to include a Gantt chart for some purpose?
No. How was that? Is that good?
Yeah, that was good.
Thank you. No, not now. I have in the past, many, many moons ago, and maybe will in the future, but I have not Ganted in a while.
Yeah, well, in PHP classes there was a class for rendering Gantt charts. Somebody provided it many years ago, and but it was not really an editor, an interactive tool for this purpose. Well, if you have any use for that, now you know there is a full-blown editor for Gantt charts. And moving on with the podcast, we are getting to one of the regular sections on which we comment about the latest classes published in JS Classes site. There haven't been many classes to publish in the latest times, but there were a few, and we are getting closer to the goal of reaching 200 packages, which, as I mentioned in previous shows, it is a goal that will determine when the Innovation Award for JavaScript components will be started. And regarding that, I already talked about this with Michael, and Michael, actually JS Mag will be also sponsoring the Innovation Award when it starts. And what Michael will be providing is a subscription of the magazine to a winner that is nominated to the Innovation Award when it starts, just like in the JS Classes site. And other than that, we're going to just comment a few about these latest classes. Michael, which of the classes did you think are more worth mentioning?
The first one on that list, Crazy Uploader, is from... Oh, I had it up here. Aha.
You are looking it with better glasses.
Yeah, I had to put on... I couldn't see it through my goggles. Sandro Alves Perez. From Brazil, hope I'm saying that roughly correctly. And I didn't, my first looked at it, I saw the name, like, oh, an uploader. There's a lot of those. This is explicitly an uploader for the Tiny MCE content editor. And while I know that Tiny MCE for some people is kind of old school, it's out there a lot. And I think people that provide upgrade functionality for that CK editor and Tiny MCE, I think, have powered generations, multiple years of WYSIWYG editors on people's sites. And oftentimes, the default behavior is not enough. So I applaud people like Sandro who make plugins for those. I don't think there's enough of those. I've struggled with that in the past. I know it's possible to go in and configure all this stuff, but I just want something that's better than the default. And I don't want to have to learn programming to do this. So again, this looks like a very good plugin to give you much better than default behavior in Tiny MCE.
Yeah, actually, it's a solution that mixes JavaScript and PHP to manage the files on the server, so it can not only upload but also delete and rename and all those things that you need to do with files that you manage. That you need to include on your documents can be images or even, I think it even supports Flash objects.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understood, Sandro developed this because he needed it in his own projects. So thank you to Sandro for sharing this component. I'm sure it will be useful.
Say it in Portuguese.
Now, you'll understand.
Well, no, but I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
What do you want me to say regarding the thank you?
Thank you, Sandro. I think you're a very handsome man. Say that.
No, not that part. Obrigado, Sandro, but...
Obrigado? Is that it? Obrigado? Yeah.
Obrigado, it's thank you.
Obrigado, Sandro.
You wanted to learn a new word. I thought you already knew that because it's pretty common.
Not in Youngsville, North Carolina. It's not.
I mean, thank you.
But
it's one of the few things that you learn first in a language.
Right. Well.
Yeah. You know there is a I'm not sure if it's accurate because some people say it's not right, but they say that arigato in Japanese came from obrigado in Portuguese.
Interesting.
Due to many centuries ago, Portuguese visited the Asian countries to do trade, and there is a lot of words that either derive from Portuguese words or were inspired in the meanings, like Taiwan, the island, which is actually a country, came from Formosa, which means handsome in Portuguese. But Formosa. It's not the same word, it's just the translation tool.
We have Formica here, which is pretty close as well, too. And Formica generally looks pretty good. So I think there's definitely a vibe between all these languages. It's amazing.
Yeah, if you go and study it more deeply, you will find that there was a lot of exchange of words between languages.
Well, I'm going to exchange a few more words with you. You son of a... Oh, no, politely. Politely. Hang on, let me share my screen. I'm going to share some polite words with you. There we go. Another component that I think bears looking at... Anaglyph. Now, Anna who? Anna, is this a woman's name? No, you've heard wrong. You've only heard the first half. Anaglyph, although I guess that could be somebody's last name. Anaglyph 3D. It's from our old pal. Well, he's maybe not that old, but he's only 24, it says right there, or 24. But that's not how you say it in Latvian. Artur Sosins. Hello, Arturs. Anaglyph present text and images ready for 3D viewing. Present text inside a given page element to appear with shadow effects. Woo! At some point, he's going to do the glasses effect. That'll be pretty slick. Or the snorkel effect. Have you used this one yet? Have you played with this one?
Basically, just displaces the images so you can see the red and separate from the green or the blue or... But basically, it's just a way to prepare certain stuff on the pages to be viewed with the 3D glasses.
But I am not... if I had the glasses, that's one thing, but I don't have any glasses to try it out, so...
Well, there are always people that enjoy those things.
I've never been very good... Do you ever go to the store where they've got the... where they've got those pictures that you look at, and if you stare through them, then you can see a horse? I've never been good at those. Were those a big thing in Brazil in the 90s?
No. I remember I was not in the 90s in Brazil, but I remember about that many years ago when I was still in Portugal. But
I didn't have glasses to try this out. So
sometimes when I go to a theater to watch a movie and there is a 3D version, I watch the 3D version. Not a big deal, but there is always this appeal to
authority.
See things in 3D to see if it will make a big difference. Usually it doesn't, but okay.
I did see Tron Legacy last year, almost 2 years ago. I saw that in 3D, and there was only probably three or four moments where something came at you, or that there was an actual impact of the 3D.
Did it hurt you?
Well, no, not so much, but I...
You got scared.
I had to wear the glasses over my regular glasses.
I have to do that.
Trying it without... I tried with and without my regular glasses, and I don't wear... Obviously, I'm not wearing them all the time. I mean, sometimes I put these on just for fun, but my regular glasses, I don't need them all the time, but I felt like I needed them in the theater for part of the time, and it was really difficult to see with the glasses on, so... Anywho, speaking of having words.
Well, I also have to use both glasses, the 3D ones and the regular ones, because after longer distances, I see all it blurred. Mm-hmm. So I have, even if it's not 3D, I have to use the regular glasses. Well, but moving on, I also would like to comment on a couple of glasses. Let me go through the challenge of screen sharing.
Are you feeling okay right now?
I'm feeling better looking at your mask.
How many fingers am I holding up right now?
I'm looking at another window.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, this subject by Carl Holtz from Canada. From what I understood, is a Muslim, and he has developed several components that meant to access resources interesting for Muslims, like retrieving information about the times when you have to pray. I hope I'm not putting it in an inaccurate way. So he developed several components that part of them are in JavaScript, other parts are in PHP.
And Flash, it looks like, too.
Well,
there's a little bit of a reference. Yeah.
In this case, the component can display RSS feeds on the browser side, and it may be maybe some of the items are actually video or audio players that may require Flash. Using the JPlayer in this case that he uses. So this component can retrieve the information from the RSS feeds, so it can display the players on page. And I think it's actually interesting.
I don't mean Carl's name, not that I have anything wrong against that, but Salamcast. It was just kind of a neat...
Yeah, I guess that's a Muslim name. And
it's a word.
Because I'm saying that because I know because he already published other components in the PHP classes site to do the other part on the server side. Namely, there is a component that can retrieve some information about the prayers, as I mentioned. They have to pray at specific times and be aligned to Mecca, I think. You have to pray in the right direction. Carl provided a solution that retrieves some information from some other servers that provide you this information. I guess this is, although this specific object is more generic, it is to play RSS feeds, not play audio and video from RSS feeds. It was part of a larger solution for that was more useful to Muslims that have these brain needs. I hope I'm not putting it in an inaccurate way because I'm not so familiar with the Muslim religion, but I hope I have explained it reasonably well. And
Wow! Okay.
What happened? Did you play some audio effects?
Yes, I did.
I guess this is new to me.
Carry on.
Well, moving on, now I would like to comment on another object, in this case, an object that will allow you to drag and drop multiple files, and I have them uploaded via Ajax, and this component by Arun Kumar from India can do that. The actual component name is multiple file drag and drop upload. So I think we have seen other similar components, but this one is always useful because there are always needs for these kinds of components. In this case, this is it uses jQuery to perform the Ajax upload, but it has to integrate with the events of the dragging and dropping files from the desktop to the browser window. So that is useful from Arun. Moving on with our podcast, it's time for Michael to tell us about the upcoming issues of the JS Mag magazine.
Yes, it is.
Is it in Google Effects? No.
I'm not telling. I'm not telling at all.
You don't want to put me to put crickets on you.
No. No, that was actually on me anyway. I'm pulling up the content list, issues list. Because this is actually in production right now, so I'm looking to see what's going there. And of course, because I'm doing the same browser, As I'm using the same browser as I am for this, everything is a little slower. We have, well, I know Mike Schwartz has continually written about his development of Silk.js as a server-side JavaScript platform. He has he's graciously been contributing his knowledge about Node gets a lot of the big press, but there are other people developing other server-side JavaScript systems out there, and Silk.js is Mike Schwartz's effort, both something that he's been doing for his own needs, but he's been sharing it. And this month he's actually talking about writing a Redis driver for in JavaScript for Silk.js. So people that are interested in not just using something, but learning how something was written, he's done a great series so far. So that's the next introduction in that, or series on that. Couple of things. Ginny Myers back with us, has a piece on, how to detect, geometric detection when lines or when objects cross each other. Kind of a math, it's not heavy on math, but it's a little beyond me. So it doesn't have to be much in the way of mathematical or algorithms. It'd be beyond me because it's just not my strong suit at all. We had something on HTML5 offline storage, though I don't think that's going to be ready for tomorrow or for Monday. But there's a couple other things that I'm actually not sure if they're going to be out next month or the month after. So that's kind of what's in store right now.
Yeah. Well, you talk about Windows 8. I was wondering if you had anything planned to.
Well, you know, I have talked to some people about it, and I'd like to have. I don't think we probably won't have anything. We won't have anything in October. We may have something in November or December, and maybe a small series on getting up to speed with JavaScript in Windows 8. When the Palm stuff was big a couple of years ago, when that was kind of going through its heyday, we had a couple of series from people on that, and I think at the time that was pretty well received. The Palm community, actually, we had one issue out, and the Palm community came in droves just because there wasn't that much information out there for it. So, and it's there, but it tends to be the Palm community knows everything, knows all about all their resources. So when there's a new one, people like to gravitate to that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, that's interesting, and I think with that we have practically ended this podcast.
I am going to continue to invite people to our upcoming conference in November 17th, IndieConf. Freelancers, people who aren't freelancers but thinking about it, or if you work for yourself part-time, developers, designers, anybody in between, we will have 21 sessions on the day. We have, I think, 14 confirmed right now. There's another 5 where I'm waiting for speakers to get back to me. In almost all cases, they're going to be yes, but we're just hammering out, making sure that it fits in their schedule. IndieConf.com, there is some information up right now. You know, I'm just going to bring that up for a moment just to share, just so that it gets some airtime. Though maybe I should.
I was wondering if you had any new speakers that were lined up recently that you wanted to comment.
Yeah, well, it's just waiting now because I'm trying to do the screen share. Do you see my screen up now?
I see, but it's in your dial.
Yeah, it is coming up. It's just taking its sweet old time. There we go. We have. Wow. I'm doing my Google Hangout through the same browser, and I should not do that. Yeah. Oh, the other thing is actually, I think it's sharing the whole screen, not just the browser. So I think there's extra stuff there.
That's right.
Yeah, we've got a couple of different focuses this year. Trying a couple of different things. Katie Benedetto, there's a picture of her at the bottom there. She's a new speaker to us. She came last year. She attended, and she's going to be talking about, there's this movement on in the past couple of years called lifestyle design. The 4-hour work week kind of kicked this off from a naming standpoint. But the idea of trying to build a business for yourself, maybe you and maybe one other person, but build a lifestyle business, something that fits the kind of life you want to have, rather than trying to fit your life around a particular business or a particular job, kind of turning that on its head. And she's going to be talking about things that she's done and things that other people are doing, tools that you can use to help guide you in that journey and so on. A lot of different ideas there, because we have somebody else who's also going to be talking a similar topic, similar focus, but he's not confirmed yet. So We will probably announce that next month. Jonathan Bailey is new to IndieConf as well. He is he runs a podcast called Plagiarism Today. He's not an attorney himself, but he has been a longtime enthusiast and advocate in issues of copyright and plagiarism. And he's going to be talking about how to protect your assets online, your digital assets, your content, and things like that. We've had a few of these people here before. And I'm not trying to skip over anybody in particular. Brennan Dunn is actually somewhat well known on a Hacker News website right now. He has written a book called Double Your Freelancing Rate, and he's up in Virginia, and he's going to be coming down to IndieConf on the day as well. So it's interesting to see who we've got so far. You can go there and you can take a closer look at the sessions. There are a few more that will be coming, but get your tickets now. There's my plug.
Well, it seems it will be a very packed event. Is it 1 or 2 days?
It's 1 day. And actually, I'll be brief about this, but it has something that's come up a couple times because it is a ways for people to come. And I think there are some people that aren't coming just because it's a 1 day event. If that's you, we don't have it on here yet, but we will be doing some sort of an event Friday night, probably an open house at one of the local co-working facilities, and probably dinner, drinks kind of thing. On the Friday night. This is a Saturday event. So we will be, if you're coming into town, don't think you have to come in Saturday morning. If you want to come in town, there's a good deal on a local hotel, and you will be able to join most of us, and we'll have a good time Friday night too.
That's great. Well, with that, we practically end this podcast. Yes. I'd like to thank you again for coming, Michael. We tried to do something different this month with Google Hangouts, starting it as a Google Plus event, but it didn't work well because it was refusing to allow to record the transmission. And so I had to start a separate Google Hangout for the podcast. So if several people said they wanted to attend did not make it, that's the problem. I tried to post the URL, but it seems it is not working, at least directly. Whoever could not watch it will be able to see it later when it is published. And with that, on my part, that's all for now.
Yes. Bye. Bye-bye.